Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome back to Working Overtime. I'm your host, Karen Hahn.
And I'm your other host, June Thomas.
And I am your other host, Isaac Butler.
That's right. All three of us are here today for another episode of Working Overtime, the fortnightly show where we'll offer advice, critique advice, and sometimes even ask for advice.
This week, we're going to talk about the Pomodoro technique and other creative strategies based around maximizing focus by taking breaks. The Pomodoro technique originally got its name from the kind of kitchen timer that's popular in Italy, where it was developed, that comes in the shape of a tomato, or in Italian, a pomodoro. And this is how Wikipedia describes
the technique. You could be in House of Gucci, June.
I know, right? Pomodoro, eh?
It's very good.
This is how Wikipedia describes the technique. Number one, decide on the task to be done. Number two, set the Pomodoro timer, typically for 25 minutes. Step three, work on the task. Step four, end work when the timer rings and take a short break, typically 5 to 10 minutes. And you can do three of these Pomodoros, and then you should take a longer break of 20 or 30 minutes. And after that, you can start again. Ooh, I want to hear the bell go ding now. So first, I wonder if you two have used this technique or any variation on it when you're trying to get creative work done?
No, I've never used this technique. I should say that my wife uses a very similar technique. It's not a Pomodoro thing, but when she has a long thing of work, she does set a timer and then she takes a break at the timer and then she goes back in. I don't think it's as short as 25 minutes, which just seems like a hilariously small amount of time to wait before you take a break. I know that the playwright and screenwriter Jeremy O. Harris swears by the Pomodoro technique because he often tweets about how he's about to start a Pomodoro or whatever. So I'm just saying that, you know, people who are very good at writing do disagree with me about this. But I'll say a couple things. Sometimes just diving in is not actually the right thing to do. Sometimes there's a reason why you're having trouble starting writing. There's some other thing that you haven't quite done. You haven't conceptualized it enough, or there's a piece of research you're missing, and your subconscious is kind of trying to tell you that through reluctance. And sometimes it's useful to listen to. To me, I think this is probably most useful when you're really struggling, really, you're just desperate to dive in and get something done. You've got a deadline, it's looming, you just can't get started. You just need something to force you, or you have 20 different projects you're working on, you just need to pick one and you're having choice paralysis. Like, to me, that's when this feels like it would be the most useful, is when you're struggling in that way. But otherwise, I think there's other things that I probably work on, and I also definitely take a lot longer than that in between breaks. What about you, Karen?
I've never used it, but that's definitely not because I've ever been like, oh, like, this will never work, or this is the wrong way to approach something. I'm not saying that that's what you're saying. I'm just saying that, like, it's never been a matter of principle that I haven't used the Pomodoro method. If anything, maybe it's because I'm afraid that it'll work really well for me, or because, as we discussed in our other Working Overtime episode, I have separation anxiety for the internet. But it's also sort of, I think, very much stubbornness. Are either of you familiar with that meme of a woman who's like sort of on the verge of tears and giving a presentation, and on the PowerPoint slide behind her, it says, "I'm a dumb bitch and I refuse to change." Like, that's how I feel. That's how I feel a little bit about it, where I'm like, my method of just plowing ahead without a timer or any sort of help will work. I can do it, is how I feel about it. But maybe I should do Pomodoro sometime.
Well, I think for me, the biggest hurdle is forcing myself to take a break. I think it's what you've been saying, Isaac. 25 minutes? Are you kidding me? And of course, you know, as with all of these things, it's not like following the rules, and like the Pomodoro police are not going to come over and cite you for
that's an amazing idea, though.
Yeah, wouldn't it? I know. I'm trying to picture the uniform. Obviously, they'd be red.
Police,
they might have like a little green hat, but yeah. But for me, like if I am writing or whatever it is that I need to do, and I am concentrating on something, convincing myself to stop is hard because I'm afraid I won't be able to get back in that zone. You know, I have some of the apps that I use, like Obsidian, which is an app I'm very fond of. One of the plugins that people have made for it is a Pomodoro timer, so you can see it on the bottom of your, you know, window. And I just ignore when it finishes because if I'm concentrating, that's why would I break that up? But apparently the breaks are the key. I recently started using this productivity app called Rise.io, which tracks what you're doing really precisely so that you can examine how well you've been able to focus. And you can also figure out what's interrupting your focus. But it too is really encouraging you to take a break between these intervals of deep focus. So I think actually it's the rest, even if it's only 5 minutes before you go on to another 25, that is really what's doing the trick here. It's not the 25 minutes of work. It's the forced 5 minutes of rest. Does that make it sound any different to you all?
I mean, it's interesting to think that that would help reset your brain, because I think that's something. I mean, June, you basically already said this, but like we're so disinclined to take breaks when we're working, like because either because we think it's going to break our concentration or because we think we're going to like forget what idea we were working on or where we were going, which definitely sometimes is true. Like that's happened even on this podcast where we've gone on a tangent and then I've been like, I forgot the question I was going to ask or the point that I was going to make. Like right now, for instance, I forgot what I was going to, what I was aiming for.
That's all the time we have this week for working overtime.
But it's interesting to think that like it could be scientifically backed or it could be like more helpful in the long run, because in the short run, it doesn't feel that way. But maybe it'll help you feel less burnt out at the end of the day or maybe more ready to like come back to it.
I think there's definitely something to taking breaks, you know, like, you know, like when you're rehearsing a play, Actors Equity requires you to take a 5 minute break every 55 minutes or a 10 minute break every 80 minutes. Now, part of that's because acting is physically exhausting and all sorts of, you're probably getting into the emotions and all sorts of other stuff. But I actually find that to be really helpful. And that is a sort of thing that happened, like my body has sort of absorbed that through having rehearsals a lot in my teens and 20s, that like, it's like, okay, every 80 minutes, my body starts to feel like, oh, I need a break right now. But I also think that it is worth saying that the mental energy and focus of generating and the mental energy and focus of revising, at least for me, I actually think those are two different processes with two different needs,
agree.
Even though they look the same, which is to say they look like you sitting in front of something with your hands out. So, you know, they're actually really...
Looks like you're not doing anything.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, when you're generating, what you need is momentum. I bet that's probably true, even if you're not writing, if you're painting or whatever. You know, what you really need is momentum. And taking breaks can actually... really fuck that up. I mean, you still do need to take breaks, but if I was generating and taking a break every 25 minutes, it would actually, that I know that that would actually hurt my output, my ability to work. And I would be angry during the breaks and it would just not work, you know? So when you're generating, you know, getting in that zone, staying in that zone is hard work. And when you take a break, which you do need to take them, but then you have to work to get back to it. When you're revising or especially when you're doing detailed copy editing, proofreading type work, you gotta take breaks all the time. And that's a thing I learned having to do the proofreading of The Method, actually. And so what I would do is I would turn on an album of process music, which is to say, you know, somewhat repetitive instrumental music that is based on rules. Canto Ostinato, there's on Spotify, there's an all cello version of Canto Ostinato that's very beautiful. That's like 50 minutes long. Steve Reich's Music for 18 Musicians, most of the versions of that are 60 to 70 minutes long. And when it was over, you know, I would listen to it all the way through. I would press stop. I would stand up. I would pace around for a bit or whatever, or eat a snack, take a walk, you know, whatever it is, and then sit back down, put on the headphones, start that album again, listen to it once or twice, et cetera, and so forth. Because you actually do need your eyes and brain to be refreshed in that kind of process.
Actually, Isaac, you've just reminded me of something that former guest Nicole Perkins said. She did something very similar. So I guess what I'm learning is that some people use music, like they know that this particular piece of music or this particular playlist mm-hmm. runs X minutes. And maybe it doesn't matter what that length of time is, but somehow it is, it's like it's a way of signaling to yourself, okay, you've done your shift and then you're gonna take a break, whatever that is. But it is a kind of, it's the equivalent of a Pomodoro timer, only it's
a musical
much more
Pomodoro.
Yeah, it's much more pleasant to listen to, yeah.
Yeah. Isaac, I completely agree with what you're saying about like generating versus revising being totally different. Like I definitely find it much harder to step away from my computer when I'm generating. Like this is something that I found very much to be true while working on my book, where the bulk of this year has been me writing and I haven't had that much time for revising and editing. And now I'm like really looking forward to that because it is a different set of muscles to go back through a something that now already exists in some form and take notes on it or move it around in some way, as opposed to generating, which is like you have nothing on the page as we're sort of talking about, and then having to make something, even if it is not the final form it's going to take. Yeah.
Karen, I love that concept of you wrote these things so that you would get to that next stage where you have this thing for yourself to play with. It's like you're making your own toys. You're making your own building blocks. I love that idea.
Yeah, totally. And I will say, you know, again, this is not to say that breaks aren't important to the generative process. They just might look different or go in different places. Or have it. Like I had a couple times writing the book, I had one of those things you read about where you just can't stop writing for hours on end. Whoa. It only happened a couple times. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's not a reliable process.
Must be nice.
But I did have a couple times where like I would write most of a chapter in one day, you know?
Wow.
But then, you know what happened after that? It was like I had blown a fuse and I could not get work done for like two days afterwards. Like it averaged out actually to the same output over those 3 days. I just did all of it in one sitting. The way inspiration is done in sort of mainstream film bears no relation on reality, right? Where the guy is walking around and suddenly he looks at the woman's gesture and it's like, oh, it's this gesture I need for my novel. And he runs away and then he just types and types and types. It just doesn't work like that, really. Yeah. Even those moments when you have those intense days, you are going to wind up taking those breaks. It's just going to be, you're going to feel, you know, like you blew a gasket for a day or two after.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break now, but we'll be back with more discussion of the Pomodoro technique.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's the best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day in everyday situations. But if that's not on the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. I've used apps in the past to learn new languages, but when I came across Babbel, I wondered if it could help me refresh my knowledge of a language I once spoke well, but was now a little bit or quite a lot rusty. I have to say, I was impressed. The advanced lessons were really useful, tips and idioms that can help with in-depth conversations on topics that I can actually imagine chatting about. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations, and the tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. What's more, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for working listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for working listeners, at babbel.com/working. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/working, spelled BABBEL.com/working. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hey, working listeners, do you have any creative advice you'd like to share with us? Or maybe you have a problem or a hurdle with your creative work that you'd like us to help you solve? Either way, give us a call and leave a message at 304-933-WORK. That's 304-933-9675. Or send us an email at working@slate.com. Okay, back to the show. I looked into the science of it a little bit. I'm the least scientific person in the world. But back in 2011, Science Daily wrote up a study that was published in the journal Cognition. And it found that, quote, even brief diversions from a task can dramatically improve one's ability to focus on that task for prolonged periods. The particulars of the study were a little bit weird to me because it was, when you talk about brief distractions, they were literally flashing a number on a screen, and that was the extent of the break or the diversion, which is kind of hard to compare to, you know, sitting and writing or composing or painting or whatever the creative task that you set for yourself is. However, I will say, when I, you know, as much as I am such a, as they say in Spain, soy de letras, like I am not, I'm so not a scientific person, and I have a really terrible tendency to be like, that study makes no sense. And then I pause for a moment, and then I remember that, like, the week that we're taping this, which is not the week that it will air, I have just, it's just been one of those weeks, I think for all of us, it's been a week where I feel like I've done about 3 weeks' work. And the strange thing about it is that it hasn't been particularly long days. I haven't worked 12-hour days. They've been maybe 8-9-hour days, but they've just been so intense. There have been no breaks. It's just been go, 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 maybe do two things at once. You know, it's just been particularly intense. And I feel like I've been working, you know, 3 solid weeks of 12-hour days. Like, I am absolutely spent. So it makes me think that my dismissal of, oh my God, don't make me take a break, I don't want to, maybe I am, you know, punishing myself with that, because actually it really, really is those intervals, however short they seem, however silly they seem, and however counterproductive they seem, because we want to keep going with what we're focusing on if we finally manage to find focus. You know, and your example, your story with your graphomania, Isaac, sounds like maybe something very similar happened there.
Yeah, you know, I totally understand where you're coming from, and you're not wrong. If I may share a little thing that my therapist has been working with me on that I have found very helpful, actually. This is true of any job, but it is particularly true of freelancers. Often you're doing multiple kinds of work in a day. Even if it's all writing, you're probably doing multiple kinds of writing, you know, or what you're doing multiple different kinds of work between in the day. And those use different muscles, they do different things, they have different demands on you. And it is particularly transitioning between those tasks are the real moments when you absolutely have to take a break and recenter yourself. And just whether it's breathing, you know, closing your eyes and listening to a piece of music, taking a short nap if you're the kind of person who could do that, reading a chapter in a book or a comic, or, you know, just doing something, whatever it is, that's when you need to take a break, right? You know, it's like when you go from, particularly when we were all at home all the time, you know, going from teaching a class on Zoom to trying to write a chapter of my book, that just, like, that was terrible. That, you know, you really need to honor that you're doing a bunch of different things and change the channel and mm-hmm. and respect that you need that sort of stuff. And once I started doing that, those kinds of breaks were especially helpful to me.
And I think sometimes, as has kind of come up in this discussion, we get, well, I shouldn't say we, I will just speak about myself. There have been times in my work life when I've been aggravated by things. Like, for example, when you're an editor, there are quite a lot of times where you are forced by other people to pause, basically because you're waiting for people to file. And it can be annoying because, like, I want to go home. I want to get on the subway. I want to whatever. I want to. But actually, it's good for you because if you, you know, if you were just on this, like, file, deliver, you know, like, it would, your head would explode. And so even if we don't necessarily enjoy those pause moments, they are actually what allow us to make those transitions, as you say, Isaac. They're actually really good for us.
Yeah.
On a maybe a bigger scale, I think it also applies to structuring your work day, where when I was still working full time at Slate and working on my book, there were times that it would really become exhausting because I would write for Slate all day. And then as soon as I got off the clock, I would start working on my book. And it was just kind of untenable for a while. And right now I'm lucky that I have the time to work on my book during the day and then have like a concrete cutoff point, I guess, sort of in the evening where I can say I have to stop working on this because what I produce now is not going to be good. Like, it's not going to be as good as I want it to be, and it'll be better if I just return to it refreshed at a later point.
Yeah, I actually had that experience recently where the piece I wrote about West Side Story and the character of anybody's thank you. But you know, like the interview with Iris, the actor who plays anybody's, was Monday at the end of the day. Then I was teaching Tuesday morning, and then Forrest needed it by 10 a.m. the next day because of his own schedule. Forrest, I should say, for those of you who don't know, is the culture editor at Slate. You know, he and I have worked together many times. And so, you know, I got home from teaching on Tuesday, had to record a quick Gabfest segment about West Side Story, and then dive right into this thing. And I reached the end of the afternoon and I was like, okay, after I put Iris to bed, I got to go back to work. I don't really have a choice. And then I was like, actually, no, that's not true. What I should spend that time doing is other work that is due around the same time. Cause I did have other work, which was recommendations for a few people because the deadline for the school was the same day. And I was like, I'm just going to get that done. Then I'll be refreshed the next morning and I can finish this and actually do a good job. And that actually worked out really well. But had I done the reverse, tried to finish the piece Tuesday night and then write those recommendations Wednesday morning, I think actually all of it would have been a disaster, you know, because the creative part of my brain was just exhausted at that point.
Yeah. Let me ask you one other thing. Do either of you use timers in other ways? Recent working guest Oliver Berkman suggested that in cases of extreme blockage, which sounds terrible, when you just can't make yourself do a thing you absolutely have no choice about doing, whether that's like your taxes, the latest TPS reports, or, you know, writing a book you're contracted to produce, you should set a timer for a very short interval, like 5 minutes, say, because we can make ourselves do just about anything for 5 minutes. And I guess the hope is that you just want to kind of jumpstart your creativity, right? Do you do things like that?
I mean, that is a thing that they talk about in addiction, right? If you don't want to use, you set timer. And that was certainly when I quit smoking. It's like, you just focus on like, I'm not going to smoke for 5 minutes. I'm not going to smoke for 15 minutes. I'm not going to smoke for an hour. And then eventually you actually get to the point where you don't have to think about it anymore, right? That was definitely the time when I used a mental technique like that, was actually to not do something. I've never heard of, I mean, other than in our episode of trying to do it, to do something positive. That sounds like actually kind of an interesting, you know, way to just trick yourself. As I said on the last episode of Working Overtime, like a lot of what we're talking about here is like, how do you trick yourself into doing the shit you need to do? And that seems like as valid a technique as others that I've heard about.
Yeah.
I've never used a timer in the way that we're describing, but I've definitely done the thing where it's like, if it's 11:45, I'll be like, I'll work until 12 and then I'll go like have lunch or whatever. Like, that's, I think, the closest that I've come.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have this week. Our timer has binged. If you like the show, please.
So, if you like so should we show... take a 5-minute break before doing the credits? Just have 5 minutes of dead air and then we'll do the
Listeners,
credits at the
you
end?
You can have 5 minutes after you finish the episode.
Well,
do you record for 5 minutes and then we'll finish the episode? Yeah.
All right, that's all the time we have this week. If you like the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And if you have ideas for things we could do better or questions you'd like us to address, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email at working@slate.com or give us a ring at 304-933-WORK.
And if you'd like to support what we do, sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/workingplus. You'll get bonus content, including exclusive episodes of Slow Burn and Big Mood, Little Mood, and you'll be supporting what we do right here on Working. It's only $1 for the first month.
Special thanks this week to production whiz Kevin Bendis and to our series producer, Cameron Drews. We'll be back on Sunday with a brand new episode of Working, and in 2 weeks, we'll have another Working Overtime. Until then, get back to work. Ding!
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.